So, another episode on Vipassana meditation. Last time we were looking at reaching the point where the mind is sufficiently calm and free of hindrances that it can actually pay attention to what is unfolding in our experience. And the idea is that you place your attention on the contacts that occur, whether they be sounds, tactile sensations, mental objects like thoughts, perceptions, memories and the like. And with each new iteration, with each new object that arises, we learn to note what's actually taking place. And that's very important, because what we have to do is develop our ability to perceive experience unfolding in terms of what we call ultimate reality. Paramata Satcha. So we really need to discuss the difference between conventional reality and ultimate reality. So the Buddha's got two different narratives, two different descriptions of reality. One is what we call conventional, so it deals with beings, you and me, how we fare in our lives, the kinds of actions we perform, the kind of experiences that we go through. It's the conventional reality that we're taught from birth. There's a you, a me, we live in towns and cities, and there are trees and birds and cars. It's that world. So the Buddha's mundane teaching is how to wend your way through that particular world, and it describes how there are many lives that we go through, and this is just one of many that we're passing through, and our actions have results. So if you bear those two things in mind and live accordingly, you will have a fairly tidy time of it, calm, peaceful, happy life. Okay, so that's his mundane teaching, but he also has a higher teaching, which is how to get off that perpetual wheel of rebirth and that wheel of becoming, how to get free of being trapped on the wheel of samsara. And in order to do that, we look more closely at life as it's unfolding. So conscious experience is unfolding, and we are learning to examine the true nature of what's actually unfolding at a more fundamental level than just the world of beings and so forth. And the reason that we do that is it is through seeing how transient, fleeting, insubstantial the actual building blocks of experience are, that undermines our tendency to crave for life to be different than it is. It's the craving for life to be different than it is that causes us to ignore the absolute nature of reality, which is that realization that sets us free from samsaric existence. So we learn to look at life in terms of ultimate reality. Paramata Satcha. Ultimate reality consists of the five aggregates and condition-dependent origination. So you have to look at how all these fundamental component parts of experience arise due to conditions, influence other conditions that are present, and cease influencing yet more conditions that are arising. So there is this never ceasing arising and passing away of conditioned and conditioning phenomena. It's like creating a matrix, and it is out of the perpetual interaction and dance of all these fundamental components of experience, it is out of that that emerges the conventional reality that we are more ordinarily aware of. And so you discover that that conventional reality, although it appears to be very solid and very absolute and very real, is in fact entirely ephemeral, cartoon-like, in the sense that it doesn't have any intrinsic substance to it. It is an emergent, these conventional reality is an emergent reality, has no fundamental basis. And that's what resolves the tendency to crave for life to be different. It can't be understood intellectually, it has to be seen directly through insight. And that's the purpose for Vipassana meditation. And people get very confused about, well, initially are confused about what constitutes conventional reality and what constitutes ultimate reality. So the traditional analogy would be that of a chariot. More commonly we talk about, you know, well, what are the fundamental components of a car? And you take the all the bits of the car and you separate out all the bits and you look at how all the little bits perform functions in the overall task of this conceptual idea of a car. So there are the fundamental bits that all go together to make up the conceptual. So, and it's not denying the validity of conventional reality at its own level. So it's not saying that there is no car at all. It's saying that the conventional reality, yeah, your car is where you left it. It is there on the conventional level. But what you learn through practicing Vipassana meditation and looking at ultimates is that it is indeed a mutually conceptually agreed upon reality. It is intersubjective rather than being objective. It's like through the development of insight, you discover that ultimately there is no car there. You understand that all the bits that go to make it up are fleeting and insubstantial, and yet there it is. There's the appearance of the car. And in the same way, through the development of insight wisdom, you discover, you look at and note, you come to understand all the components that go to make up any conscious experience whatsoever. You see from experience that they all arise and pass away due to conditions, and so that you discover what the Buddha meant when he said that ultimate reality, the aggregates themselves, are like a conjurer's trick, like a mirage. So if the fundamental building blocks have no deep abiding substance to them, which they do not, the emergent reality, conventional reality, has even less intrinsic reality. But I reiterate, this has to be understood directly. Intellectually makes no difference because you still crave. It's only through seeing all this and seeing that there is literally nothing there in absolute terms to crave for that the whole problem of the ignorance that leads to craving and the whole wheel of paticca-samuppada is ripped apart. So, but having said that, conventional reality remains conventional reality. Ultimate reality remains ultimate reality. So it is liberation through understanding that you get through Vipassana. Have I really clearly described the difference between ultimate reality and... So, yeah, probably not. But maybe it might be quite useful to leave that with you and encourage you to ask for any clarification. I will try to clarify that for you as best I can. So if you get a really good intellectual grasp of each of the five aggregates and you get an intellectual grasp of what we mean by conditionality, and then you practice free of hindrances, you will start to see them. So you note the rising of sound, which aggregate does that object go into? Well, it's a sound, therefore it's a physical thing, therefore it goes into the aggregate of materiality. And perhaps a little while further on, you realise that there's only a sound because there is a working sense base, that of the sensitive matter of the ear. It's only because of the working sense base that it's possible for there to be the experience of sound. Okay, so you see that the sound originates dependent upon there being the appropriate sense base. So then you start to get an idea of conditionality. Also, which aggregate does the sense base of ear belong to? Belongs to the materiality aggregate. Okay. So there's the sound, there's the sense base, but then you notice there's another aspect to that experience, which is the knowing of the sound. Okay. So you have the sound, you have the sense base, and you have the consciousness, which is hearing. Which of the aggregates does hearing belong to? The knowing of an object is what consciousness is. So hearing belongs to the consciousness aggregate. Yeah? So you start to put it together like that. You also begin to see that actually there is no possibility of there being the object, in this case the sound, without there being consciousness, in this case hearing. So if there's no sound, there's no hearing. If there's no hearing, there's no sound. They arise in mutual dependence upon one another. And that's a key insight at this stage of the path. You start to see that one thing only happens because of another thing, which itself only happens because of another thing. And that's where you start to get a sense that there is just this matrix of conditioned and conditioning phenomena, always arising and passing away, and everything that we know of as conventional reality is coming out of that. And so how do you determine what is conventional and what is ultimate? So in that case, were I to have that insight and I were to say it is Paul that hears, that's making an error. Paul is conceptual, it belongs to the conceptual universe, the conventional universe, but has no ultimate validity. Well, whereas hearing does have ultimate validity, it does exist fundamentally, although its existence is conditioned and fleeting. It does happen, however. Paul, as the person who is doing the hearing, as I said, only exists as a conceptual overlay on what has actually taken place. And that's the difference. So in Vipassana, we are only interested in what ultimately exists, not how we derive a conventional understanding from it. So you don't include conventional reality. So if it's seeing something, so you see, do you see a tree? In ultimate terms, no. There's shape and colour, there's the sensitive matter of the eye base, there is seeing, which is the arising of consciousness. But to say, I saw a tree, that's conventional. To say, yeah, there was shape and colour, there was the eye base, there was the arising of seeing, and there was the perception, which is the label one applies to the experience, and that label in this case is me, tree. Me and tree belong to the conventional reality. What belongs to the ultimate reality is the seeing, the base, and the object. So object, base, consciousness. So all I'm trying to do here is just trying to help establish what the difference is. And one of the key things to remember is not to mix levels, to do one's absolute best not to mix levels, and that is why it's really, really helpful to have a human teacher who understands these things, so that when you go and have a chat with them, you can really help to clarify what the difference is. So typically if a student comes to see me and says I saw no self, well, to see that intuitively, deeply, to see that the sound arose on the ear base and the consciousness hearing, to see that all those components are conditioned and conditioning, that they are arising out of conditions, that there was nobody who did it, that it was an entirely impersonal process, that is a genuine insight into non-self. But then to say it was me who saw that, it was me who had the insight into that, is then to mix your levels. Now, in conventional terms, absolutely fine. But if we're just dealing with strict definitions in terms of ultimates, then you cannot self-refer in that way. There is lots of information available to help really define what the difference is between conventional and ultimate reality. If people are really interested, they can read the Abhidhammata Sangaha, which is published by the Buddhist Publication Society, BPS. The Comprehensive Manual of Abhidhamma, I think, is absolutely fantastic piece of work. It is complicated, but it's not that complicated if you've kind of got enough of a mindset that you're not completely fazed by sort of. I mean, it's more like a car manual. It's a car manual of conscious experience and how conscious experience is constructed, really. It's an absolutely wonderful piece of work, and you can learn so much about ultimate reality. The Visuddhimagga, similarly, goes into depth about ultimate reality. So those are places you can go and look for further information. But really, that knowledge comes from, true knowledge of the difference between conventional and ultimate reality comes from practice. If you keep watching, keep perceptually dividing things up. I know it's an artificial thing that we're doing, but we always have to bear in mind the reason that we're doing it. None of this is going to enlighten you. What it's going to do is take away the supporting conditions that prevent true enlightenment from arising. It's taking away the craving that perpetuates ignorance, the tendency to ignore the true nature of reality. That's what it's for. And it is an extraordinarily direct way to do it. It is an arbitrary splitting up, deliberate splitting up of conscious experience into their component parts. To see all the little jobs that all these little different little mental factors and material factors actually do in creating this appearance of things. So it's ongoing, it's actually unfolding right now. So it's through the actual practice itself that is the quickest and most direct way of coming to understand what is ultimately real and what is conventional. Not sure quite how well a job I did at explaining that. So, as I said, feel free to ask for clarifications in the comments below, and I will endeavour to try to help you with that. But okay, that'll do for this episode.